You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Tell Ambassadors Jakar and Londo I want to see them in chambers now.
Yes, number six.
Then invite them again as firmly and as politely as you can.
Captain, either you snore or last night we had a hell of a breach in the hull.
What do I do now?
Old style, you roll over and go to bed. New style, you go out for pizza and I never see you again.
What's inside there?
One moment of perfect beauty.
Hello, and welcome to the Epsilon 3, a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. Each week, we review an episode of the 1990s sci-fi TV classic Babylon 5. This week, Season 2, Episode 16, Knives. I'm Paul.
I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And we are the Epsilon 3.
And the synopsis. Londo is reunited with an old friend, only to be caught in the middle of Republic agendas. And an alien life form invades Sheridan's body. Written by JMS and Larry DiTillo, and directed by Stephen Posey, this episode was released on the 17th of May 1995. Takes place in August 2259. And the guest stars: Carmen Argenziano as Urza Jardo, William Forward as Lord Reefer, Josh Cox as Tech David Corwin, Elizabeth Garver as Tech 2, and William Dennis Hunt as Centauri Noble. So, guys, what did we think of this episode?
It was an episode that happened. It's kind of, I guess, inconsequential to the overall storyline. Like, it's a filler episode, maybe a bottle show kind of a thing. We get some more history of Londo and some more Centauri maneuverings and all that kind of backstory. And I guess an alien life form invades John's body for some reason. Why? I don't know. So events took place.
Yeah. I like the way you described it as a bottle show when pretty much every episode is really a bottle show, which now that you mention it, now that I mention it, it should make for a cheap way of making a series. So really that should have helped them. Yeah. I hadn't even thought of that, to be honest.
But yeah, there's not too much visual effects on the outside from what I remember. And like not a lot happened.
Hmm. Dan, what do you think?
Yeah. This episode, there's half of it that I really like, but then I really like the Centauri and all of the politics and everything. I really liked, you know, Into the Purple way back in season one. So I was going to enjoy everything from that. But then the main plot, the A story, is it the A story? I don't know. Is it worthy of being called a story? Something happened. Sheridan decided to go a bit and then he just went off and then it got resolved. That was it. So yeah, not much to it. But the other half that I did like kind of saved it for me.
Well, yeah, like you guys, I watched it the first time and thought, I don't remember this one at all. And then it got to the fight and I thought, ah, oh, yes, I've got it now. I remember this bit. I totally blanked on Sheridan being taken over by an alien. but there you go. And then I watched it a second time because we were, for technical reasons, we had to watch it a second time. And I had watched it. I don't know. I hadn't watched it for a couple of weeks. So I thought I'll watch it again just to refresh my memory. And I was bored halfway through it.
So. Yeah. The only thing that was really of any major consequence is that we see a dead Markab in down below, which is a little bit of foreshadowing for an upcoming episode. But other than that, there's no real point to this episode that I could discover.
Well, let's do a quick run through. And at the beginning, Sheridan is playing ball with Garibaldi when he mentions about strange things happening and going missing in the B5 version of the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah, all whilst having a conversation in this massive baseball field that just a couple of weeks ago, they said there was no room for the Gropos when they came round. Right. And here is a baseball field. And just recently, we had this massive pandemic where lots of people were using sports stadiums as, you know, bed sits and areas for leaving people, you know, to rest. And why didn't they use that space?
Well, maybe it was that space and they did use a bit of that. But once they, you know, they've moved on and that's all resolved itself, they said, what are we going to do with this space? And Sheridan's gone, I know just the thing. I want to see if I can hit a ball so far, so high, that it will actually get into the zero gravity section in the middle and just keep going. Then it'll be a home run.
Or it loops all the way around and then comes
yeah,
back around.
Comes back again. Hits it back the other way. Yeah, hits him on the back of the head.
I guess,
it's a home. Oh, no.
I guess captains of space stations just like baseball. It's a thing.
That's right. Or maybe if it hit the ball and, like, an enemy of his came sneaking through just to, and he's just as he's about to attack Sheridan, the ball goes book and knocks him out. It's better than what actually happened. He kept fouling the ball.
Foul ball.
Yeah. I must admit, though, listening again today, in the background, you hear all of the little machines running around, picking the ball up and bringing it back, or winding up ready to fire the next ball or whatever. All the sound effects are there. If you're just listening to the two guys talking, you don't notice it. But when you listen in the background, there's a lot going on. It's really good. It would have made an excellent audio drama, if you like, if that bit had been used. It was giving it some good, nice bit of background. Anyway, where are we? Oh, yes, Malari and Via are discussing musical compositions. And all is well in the station.
Milagrosa vittima. Ti vai e magri soledad, ti mai e dara vizima.
Aia vita, l'estero, l'estero migri.
We don't write them like that anymore.
How fitting you should die with a song on your lips, Molari.
When suddenly Malari is attacked. Dum, dum, dum. But it turns out to be his old friend, Urza Jado. Malari's term for an old friend to turn up, I suppose. And he's a swordsman to boot. Meanwhile, Sheridan goes exploring in the B5 triangle. It's dark, but he has a torch. There's a crash, a bang, and hey presto, there's a dead alien. Or is he?
Like, no one sent a security guard to go with him. Like, he can just go off and go
or
into
even
somewhere
those, that those video drones would help too.
Something, at least.
Yes. Well, you know, he does take a hand to the face, which is a bit of a problem. So he goes to med lab with the obviously with the body, and Dr. Franklin clears him. But they do need to do an autopsy on the alien to see how he died. Gaping big hole in his head. Bit of a clue.
Yeah.
I think he died of a headache. Sheridan has a dizzy spell and sees coloured circles, but he needs to lie down. Malari and Veer discuss fencing and nicknames, and Urza joins them for a drink. That's it, really. Sheridan is having a rest when he is woken by a strange animal. Half bat, half pterodactyl, a Grylor. Native to Janos 7. Wow. Means nothing. Yeah.
Exciting stuff.
Mm. Garibaldi arrives pretty quickly, but the bat thing has disappeared. He tells Sheridan that the alien committed suicide. Sorry, start again. Rewind. He informs Sheridan that the Markab alien committed suicide by bashing his head against the pipes. Like I said, pretty obvious, really. Malari and his drinking buddy are reminiscing about old times, love's lost, and how his star is in ascendance on his homeworld. The political situation on homeworld is not as simple as it first seems. The Narns did not start the war, but they were forced into it by a faction of the Centauri. Urza and his house are about to be outed as traitors to the Republic, and he will be disgraced. Urza wants Malari to stand with him to help protect him and his family. Meanwhile, there are other people on the station. Ivanova is worried about everything, that everything is getting too quiet. And Sheridan has another trip. thinking trip as in, man, thinking the Icarus, his wife's ship, has exploded outside CNC. He goes to Dr. Franklin, who puts this down to a virus. That's bloody typical, isn't it? I mean, it's just like every doctor in the world. Is it stress or, you know, virus? Yeah, that's it. That's all they've got.
You need more rest.
Yes. Drink lots more liquid. Have a lie down. God, it's the same for everything.
Take two aspirin, have a lay down. I've got a spare bed if you want to use one.
Yes, you can use my bed here.
There it is.
Oh, I'm feeling so much better. he orders him to rest and let Ivanova take over for a while, which is exactly what Ivanova should be doing. Yeah, that's what she's there for. You know, when he takes a holiday, who's going to look after the place? If he's sick, who's going to look after the place? Malari tries to stand up for his friend, but Reefer is reluctant to do that, saying repercussions will be devastating. What's the story here? I didn't really understand why this guy had been disgraced and what he had done, particularly to have this, you know, being
as far as
a
I,
traitor. So
as far as I could see, he was just, you know, because he was questioning the Reefer plan, the Reefer cadre of cronies that he had, he was cast out and, you know, was being sort of slandered by the rest of the Centauri sort of court. That's all I could work out, but there were some really good quotable lines in all of the dialogue between them. You know, why make history if we fail to learn by it was from Veer. And then Veer were, you know, acting very proud of Lando for standing up, or at least trying to stand up for his friend. And these were really good moments that I was enjoying. And even that, you know, between the two friends, when they were sort of bringing up, I really genuinely believe that these were two characters who've known each other for so long. It wasn't just someone who was just thrown in. The two actors played off each other well enough to sort of save that part of the episode. Yeah, ultimately, I don't really care. You know, it doesn't really go anywhere. It's not going to change anything. But I'm so glad we had this to take our attention away from everything happening with Sheridan.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yeah, like the acting was spot on. They seemed very familiar with each other. The actual actors might know each other from before, who knows? But yeah, the Sheridan stuff, that was a whole blah.
Yeah. I mean, the alien takes over human body. It's been done before many times, different places, different times. It's hard to go somewhere different with it, really. But in the meantime, Sheridan is bat it again. See what I did there? Bat it again. Yeah.
Well done.
Thank you. Bravo. I'm here all week. Yeah, tippy waitress.
Good work, Pasoliati.
You can get some cream for that, you know. You just rub it in. Garibaldi gives Sheridan some information on the alien and Babylon 4. Because, of course, Sheridan doesn't really know about Babylon 4. Even though it's confidential. Meanwhile, at Urza's banquet, more eating and drinking before Urza finds out about Malari's association with Reefer. He challenges Malari to a duel with swords, because of course, what else would they use? Sheridan is watching the TV when his eyes turn into marbles and he sees his parents before he runs away with a purpose. Dr. Franklin gets in touch with Garibaldi and says Sheridan's vitals spiked, then disappeared. And Sheridan is taking a trip out to Sector 14 with Garibaldi in tow. See, there you go, he's got somebody with him finally. Well, sort of.
We remember that Sector 14 is 3 hours away, right?
Yeah, there was no underpants conversation this week. Like,
no.
We needed that, at least.
Yeah, I've got a purpose, I've got a mission. I've got to wait another 13 hours, but I'm going to. Sheridan Star Fury gets bogged down in tachyon particles when suddenly stuff flies out of his mouth, which leaves him unconscious. Garibaldi grapples.
That's what happened.
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty much it. I mean, you know, an episode of, oh God, what's the film? An episode of Poltergeist. Garibaldi grapples Sheridan's ship and takes him home. Meanwhile, the duel begins. Malari gets bloodied early on, but gets the victory in the end. It was all so that Urza could die with honour and Londo would look after his family. Now, that's a good idea. I like that whole side of the story that he pretty much fell on his own sword, literally. So that although he would die, his family would be taken care of and looked after. So that was good. I like the ending to that particular part of the story.
Mm.
Otherwise, it would have just made no sense. Why kill an old friend like that? Sheridan, it turns out, had a life form in his head, which wanted to go home to Sector 14. There you go, Sean. That's what it was. Trying to get home. The doctor wants to meet this alien, getting all excited. He probably wants to let it sleep in his cot. Urza sacrificed himself so his family will become part of the House Mullari, and therefore would be protected from the resolution. And that's the end of the episode.
Bravo. Excellent job. That was a fantastic episode. I give it not very high.
But you know what I would give very high?
This promo for another podcast right here on the ESO Network.
So how do we describe this show? Like, what's really going to grab people's attention and make them tune in?
Nerdgasm for your eargasm?
What?
The spice must flow to be in the know.
Don't
be a willow, grab your pillow.
But that one doesn't even make sense.
All right, stop, snag a seat and listen. The nerds are back with a brand new edition.
No!
Okay then, the Blurred Nerds Podcast. Rants, raves, reviews, recaps, and other bits of random fandom.
Well, see, that's perfect. You should have just led with that one.
Resistance is futile. Listen to the Blurred Nerds Podcast, right? Meow.
Fine. Make it so.
So, welcome back. I have no idea which promo I've just played because we've been away for a while and I've forgotten to look at my thingy, which would have told me that it was the Blurred Nerds.
Of course.
So, but I bet you what you didn't forget is trivia for this week's episode.
This is great teamwork. This really is. It's so yes, good. Trivia. The two opera tunes that Londo and Veer are arguing about were both written by Christopher Frank, who also wrote the theme music to Babylon 5. That was a good bit of singing. I actually quite liked it. They seemed to both get into it and know what each other was going to do. And this bit, and of course he's going, there's he singing it, and Mullari's going, yes, oh, and then that, and then up, and yes.
That was probably really the good. Best part of the episode.
Yes. The Markab doctor that Dr. Franklin refers to is Dr. Lazarin, anticipating Babylon 5 Confessions and Lamentations, which will be in 2 weeks' time. 4 weeks. 2 weeks' time, I beg your pardon. 2 weeks' time.
How many weeks?
2 weeks!
Weeks.
The last episode to be written by someone other than the series creator, JMS, until The Day of the Dead in Season 5, Sean's favourite episode. Sheridan's cap displays the Earth Alliance starship Agamemnon, which I can't say quickly, his former command. Garibaldi's B5 shirt could very likely have come from the gift shop prior to the Sheridan ordering it to be yanked out, boxed up, and sent back. I wouldn't mind one of those caps. It was quite good. Goofs. In the opening, Captain Sheridan is shown practicing baseball inside the central core, which is rotating. While the ball would travel in a straight line, it would appear to curve down to one side to an observer standing on the inside of the core due to the Coriolis effect. So when he hit it, it would go straight, but because the station keeps rotating, so it looks as though the ball is actually curving away. That would confuse the fielders. In the final scene, during the camera pan of Babylon 5, you can briefly see the Starfield background inside the docking bay port. I looked for it. I couldn't. There you go. So, Sean, are there any Star Trek connections?
We do have one Star Trek connection, as a matter of fact. We've got William Dennis Hunt, who played the Centauri Noble. He was on the Deep Space Nine episode Way of the Warrior as Huraga.
Okay, ratings. We use a system of jump gates, five jump gates because of Babylon 5. And IMDb scores theirs out of 10. They gave it a 7.2.
Wow. Which
7.2 equates to 3.6.
Whoa.
So that's sort of down the bottom end somewhere. So Sean, what did you think of this episode? What do you rate it as?
Well, I don't rate it very highly, as I may have given away in my talking points, but you know, like we just mentioned, the singing at the beginning was kind of fun. We get to see the swords at the end, which explains the title of the episode. Mm. We have some Markab foreshadowing. But really, the episode is very inconsequential. It doesn't amount to a hill of beans, and I'm going to give it 2.25.
Yeah. Okay. Dan?
Yeah. You know, for me, it has to be an entertaining episode for 2.5, and it's not. There's 50% of it works, 50% of it doesn't. So it doesn't work as a good episode. So it has to start there. But it just keeps going down. Every time I start coming back to the Sheridan thing, I don't really care. If it had been a Garibaldi story, and because Garibaldi had been to Babylon 4, he was susceptible to this thing and it got into him and Sheridan was the one to save him, I think I would have been a bit more on board with that because it would have made sense. And then Sheridan was clued into this whole Babylon 4 thing through Ivanova maybe giving him the details and stuff like that. You know, there was this thing that happened. So, of course, it went into him. I think there would have been a bit more curiosity to it and it would have made for something a bit more interesting. But it was another episode about Sheridan that we didn't really need. And it just ultimately sort of took it down for me. Yes, the performances for the Centauri side, absolutely brilliant. I would expect nothing more of Sam Carter's dad from Stargate, who was the friend who was, you know, his dueling partner and his best mate. That was the same actor. So, you know, I got a believable performance out of him. Veer had some great moments. There were some great lines like insanity is part of the times. You need to embrace it. I thought very apt for these days. And Ivanova just, you know, not trusting it because nothing's gone wrong lately. And just brilliant moments, but not a great episode. So, again, 2.25, just like Sean.
Wow. Okay. So, yeah, just like you guys, all the same reasons, all the same things. It just didn't grab my attention. What happened to Sheridan could have happened to any other character. Why did it need to be him? Because he's obviously the star of the show, or a star of the show. It could quite easily have happened to a lower person, or even Ivanova, if she wasn't in it much, or, you know, the Doctor himself, whatever, anybody. Why Sheridan? If there had been a reason, his makeup was different, or he was a bit like Sean said, he'd been somewhere else and picked up something that meant something to the alien or something. You know, they've been to Sector 14 before. Mm. Maybe that would have made more sense. And that was the interesting sort of, that was the B plot, the interesting story, theoretically, all about Malari. Nice bit of background, you know, nice bit of Centauri relationships, finding an old friend. Like I say, the acting was really good. Can't fault that. Veer had his moments, like you say. It just didn't interest me. It was, you know, at home with the Malaris again. It was just, there wasn't really much going on. But I'm a little bit lower than you guys, so I've gone for a straight 2. So all three of us have put it into our bottom 10 out of the 41 that we've looked at this so far. Well, ish, not 41, is it? It's probably less than that, 38 or something. But yeah, it's not really good.
No, it wasn't too good.
Disappointing.
Yeah. Still more enjoyable for me than some of the lower points of season 1.
Well,
there was a little bit more going for it.
Well, we only have to go back to, how many? Where are we now? 1, 2, 3, 4. If we go back 5 weeks, I thought it was higher than that. No, go back a little bit longer than that. Season 2, episode 5, The Long Dark. And I gave that one a 1.25. And damn, that was a 2 for you. And Sean thought it was a 3. Then again, no accounting for taste. There are even recent episodes that we've had lower than this, but it's been a long while since we've had all three of us have put in put it down as our worst episodes. Season 1, episode 10, Believers, was the last time that happened. So, yeah. Oh, well, never mind. There's always next week. Which, next week, join us again, because we will be discussing Season 2, Episode 17, In the Shadow of Zahadum.
Every generation of Centauri mourns for the golden days when their power was like unto the gods. It's counterproductive. I mean, why make history if you fail to learn by it?
You know, Vian, you have what the Earthers call a negative personality.
No, I don't.
There, you see?
If you have any thoughts on this episode, why not send in some feedback to the epsilon3@gmail.com. That's 3 spelled T-H-R-E-E, not the number. Or you can find us on our Facebook page. Just search for the Epsilon 3.
Now, if you have any other problems, any other questions at all, just ask.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.